This is a quick note to all of my listeners. If you really want to make a difference, I have an app for you. It'll collect data because detail matters. And if we have no context, why are we bothering? Phenom is an investigative research tool for the skeptics, the believers, and the in-betweeners interested in the unexplained world. Phenom's a mobile sensing application initiative to build the world's most comprehensive investigative research tool for reporting, collecting, and analyzing on unidentified and unexplained phenomena such as UFOs, cryptozoology, and paranormal activities. The primary objective of Phenom is to promote global cooperation and collaboration through education, experience, and exposure of unexplained phenomena based on analysis of real-time data collected. With Phenom, users who witness an unusual or unexplained event can capture imagery and video data in real time and input a description of the sighting so that other users will receive an alert to the sighting with its exact location based on bearing, range, altitude, and speed. Then you can corroborate the report with your own images, videos, descriptions. And Phenom, believe it or not, it's going to actually get to a point where you're going to have teammates. And you can. There's going to be this great website that you're going to be able to have informational findings, sightings, unusual activities, and an archive of articles in a detailed form for reporting a UFO. Right now, you can find this in the App Store, both Apple and Google. Download it today. It's Phenom, P-H-E-N-O-M. Greetings and welcome to another edition of Dear People of Earth. I need to give a quick little promo, or not really of a promo here, but a little warning. So we were having, or not he, Ron was doing just fine, but I was having quite a few technical detail problems during this interview. So there are several times that my browser and I stream on, StreamYard, just dropped out on me, just completely and totally just died out. I was able to get back in really quickly, but there are several moments, and Ron does just an absolutely amazing job, just kind of riffing and helping out. So I want to apologize first and foremost to Ron. It was a problem apparently with my caching on my browser, but he was a trooper and he kept it going, and big ups and thanks. So just so you know, there are a couple of bloops in this little bad boy, but hey, show must go on.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is, or morning, or afternoon, wherever you are, evening, dear people of Earth, coming to you again. Right now, we're talking to Captain Ron Janix, and he is the, he started Contact in the Desert many years ago. In fact, this year is the 10-year anniversary, and we're going to be talking to him a little bit about that. Additionally, this interview is going to be brought to you by Texas Space, as always, quantum engineering. Changing the future one little qubit at a time. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to just kind of hand it over to Ron, let him tell you a little bit about you himself. And of course, we're going to get a deep dive into the Contact in the Desert, which I have been wanting to go to for a long time and haven't had a chance to get there, but I'm going to get there soon. So anyway, Captain Ron, go ahead and turn it over.
Let me just clear something up there, brother. We just acquired Contact in the Desert last year. Gordon Peckrell and myself purchased it last year. They've Victoria and Paul had built it and they created it. You know, it used to actually be physically out in the desert. It was actually in Joshua Tree, Joshua Tree State Park. And, you know, it was almost like a Burning Man thing where people were like camping in the desert. Literally, it was very, very rough out there and very hot out there. So they eventually moved it into Coachella Valley there in Indian Wells. And that's where it's been for quite a while now. And we took it over last year and this will be our full year on our own. And it just so happens to be the 10-year anniversary of the live event. Nice. So that'll be kind of exciting. We want to really make it a big deal.
What did you had you actually, obviously you must've at some point been there before.
I was a host for them for years and years and years. And there you go. Conscious Contact. That's our theme this year. Yeah, it's an incredible event. If you haven't gone, you really should. It's sort of like, you know, we look at it like sort of what people work on all year. It's sort of an annual thing that they come here. We bring in best speakers we can and kind of get the newest, latest findings in our field. look at this lineup here. George Knapp and George Norrie are going to be together on stage for the first time ever.
Nice.
Which would be kind of a big deal. A big, big coast to coast thing. We got Avi Loeb coming again. I don't know if he's going to make it in person, but he will definitely at least be live streamed in. Thomas Jane's new, Richard Dolan, you know, Danny Sheehan, Whitley Strieber, Nick Pope. I mean, Travis Walton. We're going to do a special thing this year, Steve, where we're going to have a legends panel.
Nice.
Sort of the legends in our community, like Whitley Strieber, Travis Walton, Linda Moulton Howe, George Norrie. We're going to have Russell Targ on that panel as well. There he is, Russell Targ. He'll be 90 when he comes to that. So it's really great to have him there. You know, he did incredible stuff at Stanford Research Institute. There's Steve Bassett. He was just on your show.
Yes, he was. There's the man himself.
And you had my other friend there, Dan Harari, on too.
Yes, sir. He's where is he? Is he? I miss him.
He's on there. He's coming up.
He's coming
There's
up.
There's Paul Smith. There's Dwayne Olinger from Blind Frog Ranch.
You got a few names there. Just one or two.
Yeah. We're going to end up with 70 speakers this year. We tried to pull it back, and it just didn't work out. There's just too many people. There's Dan Harari. Yeah. So you got the HDA is going to be there. There's Tom Danheiser from Coast to Coast as well. And Lisa Gar from Coast to Coast will be there as well. So we're going to have almost, hopefully we'll have 70 speakers by the time this thing goes off. And we're trying to make it a full 5-day event now. So we really get started on Thursday. And then on Monday, they used to do the intensives where you get a chance to do like 2.5 to 3 hour, instead of just a lecture, it's like a intensive 2.5 hour thing in a small room with these guys, which is really, really great. It's a rare opportunity to get that much time with somebody, some of these top speakers. And we're going to run a free track this year, Steve. They've never done that before. So we're going to have a free tracked as well on Monday. So you don't have to go to the intensives because those you do have to pay to help support the speakers. But it's going to be great.
Are there now? It looks like you have this year is the conscious event, or how would you put that? Let me make sure.
Yeah. Conscious contact. That's kind of our theme this year because consciousness has become a very, big word in our community, yes. As you know, and we talk about things, how things have evolved and how the community has gone from nuts and bolts, 50s UFOs to right. UAPs to maybe it's interdimensional, maybe it's inner vibrational or whatever the way they describe that. So we really don't know, obviously. So it's just right. We're exploring that. We also have a big contingent of AI people, you know, Matthew James Bailey being the most prominent. And we're going to really talk about how AI can tie in all of this. Like, you know, they use AI now to track UFOs and to determine what is that object. You know, AI, you can program in the characteristics of a satellite, of an airplane, of a helicopter, of balloons, of anything it could be, and it's able to identify that. And then, you know, what's left becomes an anomalous object. And so they're using AI for that. And, you know, NASA's talking about using AI powered craft that would go out into the galaxy to explore the universe, which makes perfect sense to me. I love this idea. I have a very common sense approach to this topic. And to me, it makes perfect sense that if there was an advanced civilization ahead of us, they wouldn't send a biologic being. They would send artificially intelligently controlled computers, you know, that don't need to sleep, don't get sick, don't die. They just keep learning and collect data. That makes sense. So they wonder how these things can do these 90 degree turns and everything. Oh, they say that your brain would shoot out the side of your head if that was the case. Well, maybe there's not a biological entity on that craft. Maybe it's if it is in fact coming from somewhere else, maybe it's, you know, just an artificial intelligence.
Yeah. They call those von Neumann probes. Well, that's what humans call them. Von Neumann probes.
Von Neumann probe. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah. So what it is, so the idea is you send out 100 of these probes, right? And these probes are self-replicating. So they can take material from anywhere in the galaxy, land on a rock somewhere, a meteorite, meteor, whatever you want to land on, can use materials. And it's able to scan this, obviously, ahead of time. This is the theory. I mean, we don't have them yet, but this is the theory. So that it can go out there and then it can self-replicate. And then what happens is each probe self-replicates, and then that one self-replicates, and then that one self-replicates, and then they just scatter. And they go everywhere into if you want to go to the universe, but at least on a galactic scale. Yeah. And that way they're out there and they're each talking to each other, and they actually create along the way a system of communication. So the communication is almost instantaneous. Even though you're across light years of distance, you have the ability to have those probes talking to one another all the time. So it's a much faster way of doing things. So there is definitely a theory out there that some of these orbs that we've seen in our atmosphere, really all over the world. And it's a lot of people I hear say to me, oh, well, why is it a United States problem? Oh, this isn't a United States problem. These things are all over the place. You know, they're in every country. There are certain hotspots. And I believe that has to do with the nuclear power, us playing with
weapons. Sure.
Yeah. And I think that there's something there that is, I don't know if it's intriguing or if they're trying to warn us to knock it off or I have no idea. I don't have the definitive answer for that, but excuse me. That's sort of what you're talking about there. And it's an interesting concept, because when you think about it, people say, well, how could they come millions and millions and billions and trillions of miles and then crash? Well, think about it this way. If you have materials that aren't quite as superior as what you had maybe on your home world, maybe they're not quite as good as you think they are. It's just a theory. But getting back to part of the other, what you were talking about with the consciousness part of things, it's such an intriguing part of this whole puzzle, because I'll be honest with you, when I first got into this, well, let me step back. So my dad was in Vietnam, did three tours of Vietnam, his final tour of Vietnam, well, second and third tour of Vietnam. When he was in the jungle, they saw weird things. They saw orbs. They saw luminous objects. At first, he thought they were like things that were supposed to be part of something they didn't know. It was something from the military that they didn't know. And then as time went on and they noticed these things more and more, they noticed that these things were quiet. They could hover without noise. They could move very quickly, left, right, boom, 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 very fast. They'd go up to the top of the treetops of the jungle. And then he saw a lot of these, he saw mainly green and blue plasma orbs. He doesn't know what it was, but he's since passed. But he was not the kind of guy that makes up.
Right. They lose you, Steve. Steve, I've lost you. I've now taken over your show completely on my own. Steve was talking to us there about his father's experience with, I guess you would call them UFOs at the time. It is interesting. And a lot of these military guys, there you are, bud. I lost you. I took over your whole show for you.
Yeah, that was weird. It said, oh, snap. And then I was gone. I was like, what just happened? but yeah, yeah. So getting back real quick. So the military part of it, he's not the only one. So, I mean, if it was just like one guy, like you might just go, come on now. But this has been happening for, what are we talking now? 70, 80 years. I wonder what happened 70 or 80 years ago. Like, what was it that like, why? Because if you look after Roswell, like if you look at the uptick of all the sightings and everything, it was like right at that time. Like what happened? Nuclear. That's what happened. That's what occurred. You look at that. That's a
very good possibility. Absolutely.
Strange. It's just, there's a couple people on Twitter that do a lot of the background work. They go into all the old archives. And if you look at the uptick, like of where, those sightings started to take off, it's right around the 40s. And it's an amazing thing to go back and look at. You know, is everybody crazy? I'm just not believing that.
Yeah, that's a big part of my interest, is that there are so many peoples, even with the contactee experience. You know, we don't have two or three people that think they had this. There's thousands upon thousands upon thousands. And as you know, we only need one. So right. If one of these people are not delusional and are not, you know, having something else happen to them, then this is a real phenomenon. So I feel like right. it deserves some attention and some study.
It does. And it's amazing that you're bringing together all of these speakers with Contact in the Desert, because I one of the things that I've always thought about, especially over the past year or so, that it's really necessary for us as in the community that already are believers, and not even believers, I know it's out there, to bring this much more mainstream, because I believe that every mom and pop at every little league game, football game, soccer game should be talking about this, because it's, in my opinion, it is the single biggest question to be answered for humanity. There's, you know, and I believe that we're not alone. I believe there are certainly some very strange occurrences going on, and to just discount it out of hand is not, A, it's not scientific, but B, it's making some very sober individuals, even within our own government right now. Let's look at Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon. You're talking about Ryan Graves, David Grush, Mr. David Fravor. You're talking about people that are not, these are not the tinfoil hat people. These are decorated, incredibly serious, not all men, because Alex Dietrich is a woman, but it certainly lends itself to more credibility. And that's been, you know, I think a lot of people have come around to understanding that there's more of this going on. So for you to have these panels of speakers that have been doing this, I mean, look at Dolan. I mean, look at Nori. These guys have been in this field for how long? 30, 40 years, really?
No doubt. And the fun part is having these guys on a panel together, you know, contrast their findings with each other. You know, these guys are researchers. Right. So we look at their data versus somebody else's data, and what are you finding and what's happening? It's really, you know, we have sort of an academic scientific bent to our show, and we really try to get a serious look at this. And it's really one of the great parts of it is having these guys share their ideas amongst themselves. You know, it's not just with the attendees that get to hear them. It's among speaker to speaker, you know, having right. these guys compare notes, if you will.
So has there ever been anybody that, and I know that you're new on the scene with Contact, with owning it, but let me ask you, has there ever been anyone that you've wanted to get or see there that you haven't yet, that you're still looking to get?
Yeah, we're trying to get, it's not going to happen this year because of scheduling, but we were going to get the head of artificial intelligence from NASA. And I thought that would have been amazing to find out firsthand what NASA is doing with artificial intelligence with regard to space exploration. I mean, that would be, maybe we'll get him next year. I think that would be a fascinating, progression from where we've been talking about.
Getting back to the AI part of it, do you think that AI that could be visiting us would be reporting back, or do you think it's autonomous where it's maybe collecting data and then it goes back? Because it seems like unless they had that network of communication that I spoke about, could these just be autonomous things that are?
Well, I mean, they could be anything. Everything we talk about is an unknown. So it's very hard to speak with authority on any of these things. Everything is speculation. You know, we don't know. I try to take the common sense approach to these things. So to me, if we send something out there, we wouldn't want it to just do that. We would, of course, want that data back because we want to learn here at home. So I would presume that that's what they would do as well. If there's another civilization out there, they would want to collect data from other parts and other galaxies and whatever, and send that back home so that they could use that data however they would.
So what has been your personal experience as far as the UFO phenomenon? What can you tell us?
I haven't had any firsthand accounts. What's interesting is most of the people that do become involved in this or speakers in this do have personal experiences. And I do not. I just have had a deep interest in the subject for a long time. And I don't like the way we just dismiss these accounts of thousands and thousands and thousands of contactees, thousands and thousands of sightings. The people that just dismiss this as Stan Friedman used to say, what did he say? He said, don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. I think that's often the case. So I feel like, you know what? You have to take a look at this stuff. I feel so many people dismiss this out of hand where I don't know what the answers are, but I feel that there's certainly more there that warrants study, not just to be dismissed. There's too many people and too many things and too many unexplained things and too many unknowns that this should be looked at, studied further. So my heart is in this. I mean, I want to get all these guys here because I want to get closer to the answers.
Is there one event or contact story that maybe is more in your mind as realer and or more compelling than any others? Do you have any in particular that you, I mean, I know there's thousands.
Oh, you mean I thought you meant contact, like contact in the desert. You mean contact.
Yeah. I'm talking about any stories. Like for me, you know, obviously Roswell has always been a big thing, but there was a Japanese Airlines flight.
Oh yeah.
Back in that one, I talked to multiple PhDs on, you know, at one point tracking this with multiple radar hits going over 150,000 miles an hour from instant acceleration. And that one to me, because I can look at the data myself, it's out there. You can go look at it and look at the data yourself. And someone came along that tried to squash that or quash that data. And the controller that had the information made a copy of his hard drive. So that's right. The only reason we even have that information today.
How great he had the presence of mind to do that.
I mean, really, I mean, he must've known, like he must've seen that and gone,
This doesn't look right. Yeah. I've lost you again. Sorry, Steve. We're going to now call this the Captain Ron Show.
So here we are. While Ron graciously was able to take care of some of my little problems that we were having going on in this interview, for some reason, my browser kept going out on me and it was not great. But I wanted to just kind of pop something in here really quick. So the 10-year anniversary of Contact in the Desert conference is happening the weekend of May 30th at the beautiful Renaissance Resort near Palm Springs, California. So you're going to be able to join George Nori to celebrate with George Knapp, Richard Nolan, Thomas Jane, Linda Moulton Howe, Danny Sheehan, Whitley Stieber, and over 60 other top researchers. So come make contact with new friends and hear the latest, most fascinating information from the field of UFO studies, artificial intelligence, government disclosure, psychic phenomena, and more. Check out the entire lineup and reserve your own seats now at contactinthedesert.com. I highly recommend everybody go check it out. Now, let's get back to me and Ron.
Hopefully Steve will come right back. I'm not sure what's happening.
Yeah, I don't know why it's doing that. You know what happened? My computer just updated and probably it doesn't like what I did. So
gotcha.
I'm not quite sure.
You know, I mean, I know it's a little cliche to constantly go back to Roswell because there are so many other great cases. But what I do like about Roswell is there is just so much data. I mean, the Don Schmidt, you know, those books that those guys have compiled, they've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of direct eyewitnesses
right. That
all have their little piece and it happens to fit right into that puzzle. That is extremely compelling to me. And there are several of those guys who were military guys like your father, and those guys left deathbed confessions.
Right.
Why do people just dismiss this? I just don't see an 80-year-old former colonel in the Army, you know, especially older from the previous generations, those kind of guys. What are they doing that for, a joke? I don't think so. So I feel like what I'm doing is paying attention to some of those things. You know, you see these stories from this, you know, I don't remember specifically, but colonel or whatever, high ranking military guy,
Alexander, says,
I want my daughter to know this or my granddaughter to know this upon my death, read this. And I saw the beings, I saw the parts, I saw this. That's compelling as hell to me. And I feel like it warrants attention. And when people just dismiss that, I feel like that's not being fair. Why would somebody do that? I understand why somebody would fake one of these silly videos today or try to get internet famous or go viral or whatever. But I don't know why somebody in the 50s would have done the deathbed confession thing. I just really... So I find Roswell to me to be, if you people really look at that and look at the research Schmidt and those guys have done, it's extremely compelling. There's so many different aspects to that story, you know?
There is. And it's amazing that you talked about how they put that together. Really, when you look at how they did it, it's like, it's almost like, okay, so this guy was here and all their stories line up. Like, it's not like they were telling one story. It's almost like, how do they put it? It's almost like a CSI where they put it back together, right? It's
yeah, exactly. Like, and then we call the funeral guy, hey, we need three coffins at 3 a.m. Right. on the same day that they were supposedly taking these bodies out. And why would that guy say that?
Right. It's nonsensical because, you know, it's kind of funny. I had this contact within Arrow. Previously, I was doing a lot of work through my journalism, and for reasons, business reasons, I've stepped away from some of that. I've obviously kept the Dear People of Earth podcast, but one of the things that I was tried to be sold is that it was a craft that we ourselves had crashed, and this was from somebody directly with Arrow, basically saying that this was something. And then I had somebody reach out to me, a very high-end journalist, I'll leave it there, it said, listen, you've got that wrong. So I backed off of that, and I did talk to the person again, and I said, that information you gave me seems to be false. And I did vet this person through two different people, and said that, listen, this is the internal story that we have, that this Roswell was, in fact, a craft that was, in fact, saucer type from an earlier crash retrieval from 36 or 37 that they were trying to work out and ended up crashing. So I was sort of set on the straight and narrow by another very, very, very big journalist that said, no, that's incorrect. You're incorrect on that. So that being said, it seems like there's an awful lot of the stories for Roswell all seem to line up there, and it's been consistent since the 40s. It's not like it's been like, oh, well, I'm walking this back or I'm walking this part of it back. It's always been a very consistent story. And you can ask Danny about this too while he's out there. He has part of his team when I think it's Corso. No, it's not Corso. It's one of the guys has a note in his hand. And they went back and they deciphered the note. They used
AI. You can see that at the museum. Yeah. They have it there. And the new computer technology is able to read it. It says, you know, crash disk retrieved and this and that.
Right. Yeah. So it is. I mean, and the other part
what
of
are
that
the ads now, would say that on a piece of paper.
It I does mean, not.
What else could it be?
Yeah, there's none. There's zero. It's not a balloon. Right. It's not a balloon.
The expression on that guy's face is you can see it on his face. He's like, what the hell?
Yeah, well, that's that military complex coming at you. But if you move forward even to today, right, and you look at what they're doing and some of the pushback that you're getting from intelligence and Department of Defense and private contractors, even though you haven't seen private contractors directly come out. I think one of the amazing things that I've seen, and I've sent them questions, Lockheed Martin, and I've asked them about UFOs and UAP, and their direct answer is, questions about UAP are best answered by the United States government. They will not even
touch it.
They won't touch it.
No.
So that in and of itself is like plausible deniability, right?
Well, and that's how they say they bury these things by giving it to those companies, because they're like, well, we don't know. Go to talk to them. And then they'll just circle around and give it back to the government. So it's
right. It's one giant, if it's not there, then why the pushback, right? Why? Exactly. If it's not there, then open up the files. Okay, well, then, listen, if it's a private thing where it's like, okay, we have a piece of technology that we cannot let our adversaries know that we have. Okay, I get that. We need strategic advantage in the world. I get that. But 80 years of that? Come on now. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. If it's not there, then it's just...
Well, that points right to the UAP bill from last year that they wrote in the summer, and then they were supposed to do it, sign it on at the end of December, and then they took all the meat out of it, and it was like, well, wait a minute, I thought you said you have nothing to hide anyway. If you have nothing to hide, open the doors, come on in.
Yeah, come take a look.
I got nothing to hide. Come here and check out my whole house. I got nothing. So if you have nothing, why would you not let us look? I find that a compelling piece of evidence as well, that why would they say no, we can't do this? Come on.
So you obviously get a chance to talk to some of these larger names behind the scenes. That's obvious.
That's really fun, actually.
Have you heard anything from them that hasn't come out that you don't want to say who said it? I'm not looking for that.
No, but I will say this. I will say that there was a guy, there was a time once where I interviewed a guy who was an astronaut. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to get something from him. And he was talking to me, and he didn't really have anything. It really wasn't very interesting. It was like, no, we didn't really see much, you know? And then we finished up. I was live in person. I was talking to him, and I was like wrapping up my gear or whatever. And we were just shooting the shit a little bit. And then he starts telling me the stories about how these other astronauts came in and told him all these things that they saw, and these lights and these craft that made these turns. And I'm like, well, where was this 15 minutes ago when we were rolling camera? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's just,
it's like, why didn't you just say that 5 minutes ago?
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, no, I know. It's I've had people that I've talked to off air, some of the biggest names in this field, and some of the stuff that I've learned is mind boggling. And I've asked this question multiple times. Why?
Oh no, Steve, am I going to lose you again? I did lose you again. Just like when, like we were talking about off the air, the most exciting part, Steve was about to say something profound, and then his internet went down. So. Yes,
so here he is. I'm back.
You're back. All right.
I don't know why that keeps crashing out on me. So one of the questions that I asked was, why can't you say that? Why can't you tell people that? And it always comes back to, we're doing it in a certain way so that when it comes out and when it finally is out there, it fully sticks. Yet there's a few things that I know that I would love to shout from the rooftops, and I don't.
But you could, and it wouldn't move the needle. That's the problem. Because
not a millimeter.
Isn't it amazing? I really think if the president came out without pulling out a ship and bodies and everything and just said that this was real, there'd be a huge contingent that would not believe it.
Of course. You could bring them on. Isn't that
insane?
Yeah, it's, well, you know what it is? I think that I don't know if it's CIA, although I hear a lot of, you know, it's CIA, but they're not supposed to work on American soil. DOD, whomever it has been, has done such a good job at hiding, making a mockery making this a silly topic that I think that most people, like if you were to talk to my wife, she doesn't really want to talk about this topic, which blows my mind. But it comes down to years and years and years of conditioning and years of people saying, if you believe in this topic, you must be crazy or you have a.
There's no doubt that that worked when they started that idea of doing that. That worked till this day. That still works. I mean, it's incredible.
It is. And it's what doesn't help is that mainstream media, and I hate banging on mainstream media, but they continue to ignore, for the most part, most of this topic. I would say
even that local news stations, when they cover like a little thing, they will play the X-Files music and they will play. And it's just like, why does it have to be some fruity thing like that? Why can't we take a serious look at that?
Right. What's wrong with asking? And I don't know if I'm watching my internet. It's not my internet. It's got to be this browser. So if it crashes out again, we'll figure something out. But
is your wife standing there pulling the plug? Is
that no, she's not. She's out in the other room. I don't know what's going on. I've never had this problem before. So I'm going to have to figure out what's going on with the computer. But yeah, so it has to do with, I think, just the stigma. And what's one of the sad things about that is how many qualified people with tenured, whether it's a military career, policemen, I mean, people that are not like, you know, they're not fringe. These are people that have seen things, experienced things. And I don't know many of them that have benefited from coming out and talking about this. Very few.
Well, yeah, I don't know anyone who's benefited from talking about this. I'll be honest. I mean, I think that's a great point you're making. And so what is the incentive for, number one, there's no incentive for the government to release any of this information. How do they gain? They only gain by keeping it. So there's no incentive or advantage for them to do it. Number two, there's no real advantage for these whistleblowers to come out because they're going to make a few bucks selling a couple of books. Come on. That's not, no one's made a lot of money doing that. They don't. So it's always great when we do get very highly accredited people like a John Mack from Harvard, like a Danny Sheehan from Harvard, like an Avi Loeb from Harvard. These kind of people giving this the attention it deserves, I really think helps a lot. And I'd like to see more of that.
I do know of personally, I know of three people that are coming out as whistleblowers, and there are some protections being put in place. I've heard that there's another 40. I don't know. I do know three. I have spoken to three more, and I know what they're coming out with.
Do you have a time frame on it?
I know one is going to be probably April, May time frame is supposed to be.
Because I mean, our dream is to bring one of these new, we've talked to a few as well, and we are hoping that someone would come out before contact because it'd be great to have them appear there. Do you know when David Grush came out, it happened to happen. I guess that is correct. It happened to happen on Monday of our event. So we like stopped doing what we were doing and we all went to one room and Danny Sheehan and Richard Dolan kind of ran the thing and they played his announcement on TV live at contact, which was really serendipitous and fun for all of us to be there right when it was released.
Which of course now Sheehan is Grush's attorney too. So that doesn't hurt either. But I'll tell you that, you know, one of the witnesses that is going to come out is a direct firsthand witness to both bodies as well as crash material. Specifically, they've been in the military for a very long time. Let's put it this way. When they come out, it'll be very, very hard to discount this person.
Well, that's awesome because that's the problem with Grush. It's all secondhand information.
Right.
And that was a criticism on him. And I understand that. But I'll tell you what, I really feel every time this happens, no matter how excited we get about it, if he comes out and it's credible to many people, the mainstream world is not going to suddenly jump because this guy said so.
I believe this one will be tough to ignore. Now, that being said, you're still going to have a contingent of people that are going to say nut. You know, and again, it comes back to the same thing we just spoke about. What's the benefit? Where is the benefit? Is it money? Because I'm telling you right now, it's not money. And people seem to think that, like, guys with guys like me that have a podcast, or even guys like you that are putting,
I was just going to say, we run this giant thing, Contact. I think
we make hardly anything.
We don't. I swear on my mother's life, we don't. This is a mission-driven thing. When we do make a little extra, we put it right back in the show and get two more speakers.
It's the same thing, God's honest truth.
And it offends me how people just think, well, just buy this or just bring in another guy. We don't have any money. That's not how this works.
It's not how it works. It's just like I have been, you know, I think all of us in that are trying for disclosure have gotten the grifter label or gotten the crazy label, or you're a nut. And you know what? I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, I'll open up my books here. I've made, since I've started this entire thing, probably $400. I've put out probably 7,000.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's this, like, a
money losing venture.
Trust me, the worst grifter on the planet. I am the worst. it's just like, I'm a dollar heir. I mean, it's just like,
yep.
It's non-existent. So when somebody says, well, because they're going to go write a book and they're going to go on the lecture circuit, or they're going to do this, you know what? No, it's just not there. I mean, I don't know what to tell you other than that does not exist. It just non-existent. So when I hear that argument, the first thing I hear is the person really doesn't understand economics in any way, shape or form. So there's that's one. Two, the ridicule that you receive, and I've received this much comparatively to like David Grush, who had that smear piece put out on him. Or Lou, who is constantly just absolutely inundated with even death threats. So it's a situation where we're not doing this because we think we're going to make money off of it. We're doing this because in my opinion, in my reasoning, is that I believe humanity has a right to know exactly where we are in the world and in the universe and in our own galaxy, in our own backyard. And I think it's through programs like what you are doing that are going to help push.
I hope so. I mean, I'm getting older, man. I want this. I want to know. I really do. I feel like that drives a lot of us. I think a lot of these researchers feel that way. We have an innate drive to know the answers. I know I personally feel that way. And as we get older, Steve, I feel like I really, really want to know the answers before I die. You know what I mean? I'd like to get closer, because a lot of these people make speculations, and that's great. And maybe some of it's true. It's just that we don't really know yet. You know, and I'd like to get closer to that. And these type of events, particularly Contact, is where you're going to get as close as we can. So I'm hoping that this will make a difference. And if these guys all keep doing the great work they're doing, that maybe we will get closer, and maybe eventually something will move the needle, and maybe we'll get some more whistleblowers. I mean, that's, I don't know how else to get it out there. That would be great.
Yeah. And I know that, like we talk about disclosure, right? And our friend Steve uses the big D disclosure. You know, the president comes out and even we both said, I don't know that that even matters. You know, I hear that. It's so weird. I hear this all the time that it's a smokescreen. They're trying to tell you that COVID isn't real. COVID's real. So they're going to say alien invasion. And it's like, I see these just weak thoughts. And I'm like, I don't even understand how you get to that thought process. Maybe there's so much distrust of our government that and governments worldwide that's the thought process that's going on. But
and that's worse than ever now. Politically,
it is.
It's just blown up with. I never even talk about politics on our shows or anything, but it, just in general, to say that obviously politics have gone completely nuts the last 5-10 years. It's craziness. So. It's hard. You get a divided audience. If somebody does come out, big D disclosure, half the people aren't going to believe it anyway.
It's frightening.
Who says it? It's like, come on. I don't know why it's so hard for people to they're so quick to dismiss it. Why don't we give a little bit of credence to these people? I don't get it.
I don't either. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think that what the people are doing behind the scenes, I'm hoping is taking a toll on those that are trying to keep the secret quiet. I happen to know a couple people in particular are really in Washington all the time and just pounding away at this issue every time they can. And I think that's just where we have to keep going with this. I think
it's really important. Absolutely. Yeah,
it is. And I think that, again, like I said, with things like contact, we need to keep doing these types of events and we need to continue to outreach to, like I said, I like the whole mom and pop idea. If you can get this in the zeitgeist, if you can get this into every conversation, it's going to be very difficult for our government or any government to say they're not either interacting.
So many people dismiss this, Steve. And then the argument is, well, if the aliens are here, why don't they reveal themselves to everybody? And that's an excellent argument. Why don't they? Why are they choose to be clandestine? If visitors are here, why don't they land it on the White House lawn? Would be an argument an ignorant person on this topic would make. But, you know, that's a point. Why haven't they revealed themselves? Why would they reveal themselves only to certain people? You know, these are good questions.
They're very good questions. And they're, you know, that's probably the biggest one that I have struggled with is why the clandestine nature of this. And I think the answer that I always best come back, if I use my rational brain, is that maybe they're not quite as prevalent as we might think they are. Therefore, there's a possibility, you know, David Grush alluded to this a little bit. Maybe it's a civilization or civilizations that are not that far ahead of us timeline, but took a different path technologically than we did. And instead of going to the warring way that and humans are a warring species, plain and simple. Didn't take that path and instead are actually maybe technologically more advanced in certain ways, but also maybe less advanced in their capabilities of war. And that, you know, maybe there's a situation where humanity could easily take them out. So that's tough to argue
because, you know, if you have the technology to get here, boy, that gives you a leg up right there. I mean, you must be on some level right there, you know?
That's true. And it's, you know, it's such a hard thing for me to put into, like, I don't know.
That's okay. Cause this is all speculation. Nobody knows. Right. None of these people that claim to know the answers because if you ask 100 people in this community, you'll get 100 different answers. So it's not something easily to be pinned down and it is an unknowable, but you know, I have great respect for these researchers who keep digging into this data and exploring and talking to people and researching and getting us closer to what may in fact be happening.
Well, I think there's one thing that there's several things that I'm 100% sure of. One, we're not alone. One, or two, there is some sort of presence here on Earth. Three, I cannot give a definitive answer, though I've heard a lot of speculation and I've talked to people that are specifically in the know. One of the things that I can tell you that about the people that I know that are in the know has been, and this has been pretty universal, is that the government, and I hate saying government, but they, you know, don't know as much as you think they know. That there is still quite a bit of this that is an unknown. They know a lot, but they don't know everything you think they know.
And I think that's a very plausible thing. I believe that 100%.
Well, not only that, but the idea was, and I followed up my questions with this, were, well, if they don't know what they don't know, right? It's almost like an embarrassment thing. Like if the government is going to come out and say, okay, we've known since 1947 that, or earlier, that we are being visited and we've had crash materials and we've had beings and biologics, whatever you want to call it, non-human intelligence. and we don't know by now everything there is to know, that's almost an egg on your face situation, right? That's almost like a,
all the more reason to keep it quiet.
Right. So it's almost like a plausible, again, I use this plausible deniability. Yeah, we know they're here, but we don't know what the hell is going on, why they're here. We have interacted with them, but we haven't interacted. You know, what are all the answers to these questions?
Or what if they do know why they're here and it's not a good reason?
It's really bad. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. If I have cancer, I want to know I have cancer. You know, I want to know.
I want to know, but you can see why someone wouldn't want to reveal that.
I do. And you can see some of the reaction of people that, you know, you have small little pockets in the world that at times something happens and it's like the whole society just melts down. And I hate to think of that ontological shock terminology, but it really comes down to that cliche that in groups we're stupid, as individuals we're brilliant, right?
I'm with you on that. Think about that. If you have a 5-year-old girl and she has cancer, you know, how do you explain that to her? Maybe some parents would choose not to explain that to her. You know what I mean?
Right.
You could, if you give
the government
credit, that there's an argument to be made for that. You know, there's so many ways to look at this thing.
There is. And I come back to something Lou Elizondo said in an interview, that it was probably one of the biggest things that made me stop and go, And he said something, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines of, maybe if we acknowledge this presence, it then begins either, I don't think he said countdown, because I don't want to misinterpret what he said, but
see, again, he gets right to the punchline and then they pull the plug on him. It's unbelievable. I apologize that we're having tech issues on Steve's.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. Well, I'll wrap it up right after this because I don't know. I'm going to have to figure out what's going on with this. This has never been this before. So real quick, what I was going to say was he was talking about what if when you engage with this phenomenon, whatever this phenomenon is, it triggers something. Whether that's bad or good, I don't have the answer to that. But it was an apropos question to ask because I thought to myself, you know what? That's a great question. Maybe they don't want to be known. And for whatever reason, we don't know why. But if we acknowledge and we come out and we say, yeah, you're here, will that then trigger, okay, well, now it's over and bye-bye. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm just saying it's as good a theory as anything else.
Yeah, right now, it's an unknowable. So maybe, who knows?
You know, or could it be that when we acknowledge it, it's some type of, I don't know, good versus evil. And it really, I don't know. It's just, it's so much to this that there's, you know, and I don't necessarily believe the good versus evil thing. I think it's more along the lines of this is a civilization that we're interacting with in one way or another, or is interacting with us in one way or another.
That's most plausible to me.
To me as well.
The further you get away from that, the harder it is for me. Once you introduce magic or paranormal, mm-hmm. where it's interdimensional and vibrational, all of that gets harder and harder. And time travel, now it's even harder for me. But it is, for me personally, much more plausible to think of just technology. Just somebody's mm-hmm. got a 4 billion year jump on us and they're further away and they technologically have the ability to do this. That's not a big stretch. No not magic, no either. Paranormal. It's just real. Just
that's what I came into this believing as well, is that I can understand the technological I have a hard time with the rest of the, you know, they call it the woo, but I have a hard time with some of that because my mind thinks on a technical wavelength, right? I see this microphone sitting in front of me. I see that. So when that's the way my brain works, right? It doesn't work through demons and angels. And now I'm not saying that's not it. It may very well be. I don't know. I don't have the answer. I'm just saying for me personally, I can see something in the sky and say, okay, I see it and know that it's a tacit. I can go knock on it. And I can say that, well, maybe you don't want to if they have nuclear things going on. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I can see that.
Of course, I completely agree with you. Yes, sir.
And the bodies. That's the other thing. If there's a biological body, okay. If not, if it's an AI that is somehow creating something, which, okay, if it's 4 billion years ahead of us, shouldn't be difficult to do for them. Think about where we're going now.
Think about where we're going to be in 10 years. You know, I saw this week how we have text to video. Have you seen this, Steve?
Oh, it's insane. Text
to video. That just blew my mind, man.
You can make a whole movie. 20-second. You can cut every 20, 30 seconds, and you could create a whole movie.
There's probably some cat out there now working on that. Some kid is in a college dorm going, I'm going to make my entire... Remember like when the iPhone came out, some kid shot a movie, like a 90-minute right. movie on an iPhone. Well, someone's going to do...
There's a kid out there doing it right now.
Right now. He's making a movie.
And it's going to be good.
Text-to-speech, sitting here, making these 20-second clips. So put them in order. Bada-bing, bada-boom. Not a $100 million budget.
And it'll look good.
And it'll be good. And it took him a weekend. And it's sickening.
Yes.
So yeah. Technology is amazing.
It is. So I'm going to wrap up because I don't want to blast out of here again. I don't know why this is doing this to me, but I will figure it out. I might have to do a couple edits to fix it. But Ron, it has been a pleasure talking to you. And again, everybody, Contact in the Desert, Conscious Contact, May 30th to June 3rd. And I'm going to just pop that up here one more time. So I think it's important that everybody sees it. Let's go present. Share screen right there for you. Share it. So if you get a chance, I don't know how much is still available as far as hotel rooms and everything, but get out there. It's going to be a great time. I'm sorry I'm going to have to miss it, but I will get there very soon. So
we'll get you out there next year, Steve.
I would love to be there and love to talk. It would be something I would enjoy very much. So again, thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry for the little issues that we had here for the recording, but I will fix that and figure out what's going on.
No worries, brother. Thanks a lot for having us on. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ron. I'll talk with you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Dear People of Earth. I appreciate everybody's time. Also, I'd like to just remind you not only about going to contactinthedesert.com, but also to download the Phenom app. It really is an amazing piece of technology. It is created by a good friend of mine, and he really is just doing a great job. So again, go download that app. And again, thanks to Ron Janix for being in on this episode of Dear People of Earth with me. Thanks so much. I truly appreciate your time. Have a great one, everyone.